It's showtime.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, the penultimate day of July 2019. It is the 30th day of July 2019. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us. Hot on both Titanic smokestacks, according to Brother Deacon Asa. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. And, we begin every program here with thanks. And thanks go out to Jim in Spain and to Ronan in the Berg. And to Clarence, formerly of Philly, now of South Carolina, Stan. Thank you, all three of you, for being partial sponsors of a quarter of every month. And thanks to all of you who each and every month make it possible for this little broadcast effort to continue into another month. That's how we've survived for 15 years, month by month by month. And I, Agnes, we all, Dr. Bill, we all thank each and every one of you. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is Trumptanic Tuesday. It is the day when, if we don't celebrate, we do at least take note of those moments where the intellectual giants of the White Wing, seeing an iceberg in the not too far distance, yell, "Full speed ahead, we'll show that bastard." Yeah, that's what Trumptanic Tuesday is all about. And, you know, it doesn't always have to be about Trump. I'd like to, you know, I enjoy those programs when we can get through without talking about him. I'd say the odds are pretty long against that right now, but hell, you know, you can't fault us for trying. Lady B gets us started by saying, "More innocent lives lost, another day in America." Talking about the shooting in Northwest Mississippi, in DeSoto County, Mississippi. Wonder why it's named that. Claimed two lives. A disgruntled ex-Walmart employee deciding to exercise some Second Amendment remedies. Another waffle gun owner gone homicidally wrong. Once again, you know, something that we observe here constantly, near constantly. The difference between a lawful gun owner and an awful gun owner is the letter L. And that's about it. Because you never know how one is going to become the other until it's too late. But I've got my Diet Orange Crush here, and we'll get through the evening. Lady B says, "We shall endure. Conversation radio keeps us sane. What are you and Todd cooking this weekend?" Well, I'm learning slowly but surely the quirks and foibles and the ways of the griddle. It sounds like a It sounds like maybe some sort of kung fu movie with lots of teppanyaki and cubed squash involved and fried rice and eggs. Yep. I'm learning the way of the griddle. Today I foraged some cardboard and made a couple of shims for the front legs of it because it was tilting a little bit too far forward, and I've got it a little closer to level now. And that makes a significant difference. More BLTs today. Because it's that time of year. I forget who it was. I think it was Yashar Ali on Twitter who said he was horrified to have his day start by seeing a woman eating a tomato like an apple. My God, I've been doing that for as long as I can remember. Because this time of year, if you've got a tomato patch or you've got a friend who has one, well, you let the sun get high in the sky and those ripe red berries, for tomatoes are indeed berries, warm up with the day, and you just pull one off the vine and you rinse the dirt off of it, and maybe you've got a container of salt handy. And for that first bite, because it's, there's nothing for the salt to stick to, you kind of do it like tequila. You put a little salt on the space between your index finger and your thumb, and you lick it, and you take that first bite out of that tomato, and heaven happens on your taste buds. And then you've got room. And so you just salt the tomato itself and you keep going. Maybe it's a hillbilly thing? I don't know. It's almost got to be a rural thing. Because, well, you can't do that with those little pink baseballs that come in thick cardboard boxes up from Florida and resemble a tomato. The way a styrofoam packing peanut resembles a peanut. Now, in the city, to be fair, especially in perhaps more in some parts of the country than others, you can go to a farmer's market and get something similar. But there is nothing like it. Nothing like it in the world. The other thing, of course, I've been thinking about is fresh tomatoes and some blue cheese crumbles and some sweet sliced onion and some avocado, and you just toss it together in a bowl and you hit it with a little teeny tiny, just a drizzle of balsamic vinegar, and toss it and let it sit for a little bit, and the fats in the avocado will mingle with the balsamic vinegar to form a dressing. And having that cool on like a piece of romaine lettuce for around lunchish, that'll make you very, very happy. You can also do fresh mozzarella the same way. I just have a thing for blue cheese. Yeah. Yeah. And then there's the old country thing of with fresh cucumbers, because it's fresh cucumber time right now too. You peel the cucumber and you slice it, two or three of them. Then you thinly slice a sweet onion, and you make a vinaigrette out of sweetened condensed milk, Eagle brand milk, and white vinegar, and a little bit of salt. And you pour that dressing over the cucumbers and onions. And you, again, and a few ice cubes. And again, cover it, stick it in the fridge. And this is the time of year when I have no problem whatsoever being a vegetarian. It's easy and it's wonderful. So those are some of the things that are on my mind. I don't know about Todd's, but those are some of the things that are on my mind. And, of course, by this weekend, I should be able to be doing, and I'll probably start the batter on Friday evening after we get off the front porch, sourdough pancakes.
Woo!
Yeah. Because I've still got a reserve of Roger's syrup. And goodness me, the ginger peach is not to be missed. Wow. Just wow. Let's see. A couple of emails rolling in early. Don in West Tennistan reminds us, South Haven is just over the line from Memphis, only 2 or 3 miles from Graceland. That was my understanding. The extreme northwest corner of the state of Mississippi is where is DeSoto County, and DeSoto County named because there is some supposition that that might be the county where DeSoto's colonialist, diseased, genocidal expedition, minus DeSoto, him being already dead and everything, finally set eyes on the Mississippi River. Mm-hmm. That moment memorialized in a complete fiction in the form of a giant oil painting in the rotunda of the United States House of Representatives that should probably be moved to a museum alongside the other painting that's in there of the baptism of Pocahontas. But the one, the DeSoto discovering the Mississippi River fiction is particularly odious because you've got a non-dead DeSoto, which he very clearly was by then. You've got a non-dead DeSoto aside some giant-ass horse looking down on the poor, cowering savages around him, when in fact the indigenous people that DeSoto ran across were far more civilized than that Spanish monstrosity himself. It's just history. It's just history. So, as far as the weekend's concerned, I mean, hell, we're 4 days away from that yet. Why are we talking about next weekend? Yeah, I'll probably put out some food porn photos of the griddle. And I was talking to Dr. Bill the other day, and he said he gets such a kick out of my posts of the various stuff that we cook outside. I told him the next time that the Boston Butts go on sale in those vacuum-sealed two-packs up at the Wiggling Pig, I told him that I would brine them both, do one for the family, and do one for him, take it over for him and Wilma to enjoy. Dr. Bill's going to be off the air next week, all week long. I can't imagine what this would how this could possibly... Well, he has my sympathy. They're going to be babysitting three granddaughters ranging between 6 and 13 for a week and possibly two. And, well, let's put it this way. He'll deserve the barbecue by the time he's done. Far and away, yeah. You know, what's that? Silent R. Lamar says, hey, Bob, duck. Trump is working on losing his racist base by talking about helping the blacks. I know. It's in the stack, Silent R. It's in the stack, man. And Kyle in Kentucky Stan says, I think I've mentioned that I'm a cashier at a grocery store on the program before, and if not, I have now. Anyway, today a mother of two came through my line. Both of the children were very young, one a girl of about 3 or 4, and a boy maybe just older than one. The boy looked at me and gave me the biggest smile you can imagine and did the belly laugh that babies do. It made my day, but also made me wonder how the hell can anyone, especially our so-called leaders, intentionally hurt and harm children? The fuck is wrong with us that we're letting it happen in our name? And that is a discussion and a line of inquiry that could take up the rest of the program for as long as it remains on the air, Kyle. I don't know if you saw this, but there, you know, there's hurting children and there's hurting children. There's putting children in cages at the border. And then there's hurting the children, you know, here within our midst. Because the Trump regime, the titanic intellects that they are, has gotten caught in the midst of some filthy Trumpian business. Yeah. You don't know who's responsible for this piece of hateful, miserable bullshit, and it's not something that other Republicans haven't done in the past. But the NBC News headline says, "Trump plan failed to note that it could jeopardize free school lunches for 500,000 children. The administration failed to include its analysis of how many school children would be affected by food stamp changes in its formal proposal, according to the lawmaker who was briefed on the figures." What it boils down to is folks over at the Department of Agriculture, you know, godforsaken bunch of Trumpian maggot Republicans that they are sitting around pearl-clutching and hand-wringing over food stamp fraud. You know, people just out there eating food and not having a legal right to it. Yeah. Because what it has to do with is the automatic eligibility of children for free school lunch and free school breakfast, which is, for many children, the only place that they get a decent meal on a regular basis any given day. This all comes from Representative Bobby Scott, a Democrat from Virginia, who is chair of the House Committee on Education and Labor. The way it works is, under the rules as they now stand, if you get food stamps, you are automatically enrolled onto the federal program that gives free breakfast and lunch at school to your kids. It makes sense. It reduces paperwork. It reduces duplication of administration. And it has the added benefit of making sure that little children in America don't starve. Little children in America not starving, of course, is not a priority for the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, amosexual, maggot Christian Republicans. Because they missed that the entirety of Matthew chapter 25 just isn't in their New Testament. It's replaced by a few pages that say, don't be gay. God loves guns. God loves Trump. Trump is sent from God. The whole business about if you've done it unto the least of these, my brothers, you've done it also unto me. Thanks for playing Jesus. No, it's not in the Republican Bible. So what the USDA wants to do is change it from free lunch to reduced price. And you know what? If reduced price lunches are, you know, if you don't have the money, you don't have the money. So, yeah, almost half a million American children, 465,000, would qualify for reduced price lunches, but would not qualify to simply have their breakfast and lunch provided. And instead of having the automatic enrollment, the USDA wants to get rid of that, forcing families to apply separately, who may very well not have either the time, the means, or the ability to do that enrollment. And in Confederate states, remember, they do everything in their power to keep people off the rolls. There was that notorious story from a few years back, I think it was during the Reign of Error under a dim leader, in which a Georgia benefits, welfare benefits manager infamously placed a Zero brand candy bar on the desk of every social worker in the Georgia State Department, because these things are federally funded, but they are administered on a state basis. She had a Zero candy bar placed on every worker's desk to remind them that zero was the number of people that they were supposed to be enrolling. These are, of course, the Christian values of the Republican Party. Yeah. These sick, twisted, demonic, if we dare use the term, Republicans get a case of the fantods, thinking that one child might eat a meal at school that maybe marginally, tangentially, that child's parent or parents, or all too often grandparents, might actually be able to afford to pay for. What a sick load of immoral, unethical, misanthropes they are. So yeah, Kyle, what the is wrong with us that we're letting it happen in our name? The GOP is wrong with us. We'd have a pretty nice country if we didn't have any Republicans in it. And this isn't new. This goes back to when Harry Truman decided not to run for president again, because the Republicans had done such a good job of screwing up the country by being a do-nothing Congress, and he in turn had made mistakes of his own, and he just said, screw it, going home to independence. Okay. Harry Truman wanted, for instance, to set up a national health care service, just like the one that was being set up at the time in the United Kingdom. But the Republicans screamed communism. They screamed socialism. And so, we didn't get it. And we still don't have it. Tonight, maybe we'll find out a little bit more about who is in a position to talk about finally remedying that. Is there such a thing as a Biden bingo card? And if you're playing Biden bingo during the pageant tonight, do we have a square that says people love their for-profit insurance? I think we better. Because, see, that's what you're going to hear. From Bernie and Elizabeth Warren, you're going to hear that we need to take the profit motive out of the way that we provide health care in this country. And they are correct. From Kamala Harris, you're going to hear her say that she wants Wall Street to be involved in providing health care to all Americans, with something she's calling Medicare for All, but ain't. And from Joe Biden, you're going to hear that America is simply chock-a-block with people toddling along in their 1977 rusted-out Chevy Caprices with a Bush Cheney sticker on it, next to a Romney Ryan sticker, next to a Trump sticker, next to a sticker that says I love my for-profit health care. Yeah. I knew I forgot something today. Damn it. Forgot to go to the liquor store. Forgot to pick up a brand new swirly straw and a bottle of rot gut tequila. Because it may be necessary this evening. Especially with the Biden parts. Look, let's be clear. If Biden is the nominee, please, sweet fake baby Jesus, don't let Biden be the nominee. If Biden is the nominee, I'm a voting for him. Oh, you betcha. And he we're told that he is certain to win in November 2020 because all of those bajillions, not just millions or trillions, bajillions of Americans who voted for Barack Obama and then turned around and voted for Trump, well, they'll get right in behind Joe Biden, and we'll have him in the Oval Office. We just won't ever have health care where every American can go to the doctor when they're sick. Oh, and something else I meant to mention. Because the for-profit media, the multimillionaires in the for-profit media, have done such a monumentally good job, not just of talking about, echoing that bullshit talking point about how Americans are happy with their for-profit health care. This talking point brought to you by the American health insurance industry. Not just that, but they've gone absolutely bananas over the last few weeks over the idea of, and of course they're complicit with the maggots and the maggot campaign in this, and all the various complicit Republicans. They're complicit in claiming goddamn socialist Democrats want to give free health care to them, they're illegals. And the Merca don't want none of them illegals to be getting no health care. Hi, I'm Bob. Hello, Merca. Hello, maggots. I have a question for you. Let's say your darkest nightmare fears come true. Let's say some little toddler comes across the border with the Ebola gonorrheaSyphilis. And sneezes. Now, you don't want none of them illegals to have no health care, right? So how do you plan on stopping the spread of the Ebola gonorrheaSyphilis? If you're not going to hospitalize and provide health care to the people who have it. Jesus isn't going to save you. Sitting in a hot, smoky room like the Pope at Avignon during the bubonic plague of the 14th century is probably not going to work either. No, you're gonna need for people who have been infected by the Guatemalan Ebola gonorrheaSyphilis to have access to health care, and not just access, the real deal. And you're not going to be able to keep people in a tent in somewhere in New Jersey like Chris Christie did a few years ago when he was having a baby over the Ebola. Mm-mm. Ah, yucky, Steve. Steve from Georgistan says, not going to be here long. Got food poisoning. Probably from the buffet at the Holiday Inn. Ick! Steve, it's time for you to buy yourself a propane griddle, brother, and not rely on the buffet at the Holiday Inn. Get better, and remember, if there's... Well, when that kind of thing happens, it's always valuable to start replacing the good flora that's down in your gut. So, yogurt, or you being a southerner like me, nice square of cornbread and a big ice-cold glass of buttermilk. I had to buy some buttermilk because I was anticipating the making the sourdough starter. And so I got a half a gallon. I didn't get any of that thin, non-fat buttermilk either. I got whole milk buttermilk with live active cultures in it. And, you know, made the sourdough starter. And thought about how, yeah, you know, I'll need that for the pancakes too. But then that hot summer sun just got all over me. And I couldn't help it. Oh, I poured a big glass. And I realize that the anti-buttermilk brigade out there is engaged in a full, all the way to their curled toenails cringe at what I'm saying, but damn, it was good. For it was ice cold and tart. And yeah, I ground a little black pepper onto it. The only thing I was missing was the cornbread. Whew. Huh, that's no good. Sparky's got food poisoning, too. What'd you get into, Sparky? But damn, that buttermilk was good. I'll probably have to buy another half gallon. I just asked Sparky, did you go to the buffet with Steve? Oh, what's happened, though? I remember Ferg got wrecked by the buffet at Shoney's over in Fayetteville, which is mercifully now closed. Sparky says, bad cheese and French bread. That's got to be some real bad cheese. Because the funny thing about cheese is it only becomes cheese because it's gone bad. It's kind of like, you know, yogurt, buttermilk, sour cream. I guess it's a sort of controlled badness. Well, I got us started on the Titanic intellect of the USDA. But everybody else wants to talk about summer salads. Kyle says, call me lazy, but I prefer simply peeling and cutting up the cucumbers, cutting up some tomatoes and sweet onion, and letting it sit in Italian dressing overnight. It's the best summer snack I can think of. Oh, try it with the add an avocado and try it with the balsamic vinegar, Kyle. You will not, it's even simpler than buying. Yeah. I will not steer you wrong. Yeah, well, he drinks buttermilk, too. Meanwhile, Dave from the Blind says, I got a vegetable salad perfect for something. You take broccoli and cauliflower, cut the florets off. You dice an onion, red or green, works well. Green and red peppers for color. Favorite Italian vinegar-based dressing. This must be an Ohio, Kentucky, Indiana thing. Toss it lightly, refrigerate it, and serve it right out of the fridge under the... it only takes about an hour and a half in the fridge to get nice and cold, but on a hot day, there's nothing better. Salad from Dave from the Blind. Well, we're turning things back toward getting on track. Kyle adds, subject, fascist regime making kids starve. They didn't fucking fail to mention shit. They intentionally left it out because the little cowardly bastards didn't want to tell the truth to their voters whose kids rely on free school lunches. Agnes has remarked on this in the past, and she's absolutely right. You know who are the worst to hoot and holler and shriek and scream about people taking advantage of, you know, taking advantage of? Can you hear the dick finger quotes in there? Taking advantage of. Things like nutritional assistance. People, and particularly women, who've been on it, who have benefited by it, and have somehow managed to, in the case of one person I can think of, marry out of it, or, you know, had their kids grow up and now they were able to go back to work, things like that. And they will carry on till hell won't hold them about those people, those poor people, those people who, they got a 23-year-old car. What are they? They don't live in a cardboard box. What are they doing getting the welfare? By God, when I got it, I needed it. And this is one of those things that's a gentle reminder of what a bunch of assholes Americans really can be. With the subject line, food stamp fraud, Ron in Raleigh says, food stamp fraud is very rare. The most commonly noted fraud is the National Retailers Fraud Stats, which is around 1.5%. By the way, I hope both you, Sparky, I hope both you and Steve get to feeling better. Sparky says he's going to lay down. Get better and get those good bacteria going back in your gut. Around 1.5%, Ron notes. So the people looking to eat are not committing the fraud. It's the retailers. Why do we treat the children the way we do, you ask? Kyle asks. It's because a large swath of the American public is pig-eyed, mean, selfish, and venal. On Sam Cedar's show yesterday, he interviewed a fellow who's written a book called Dying of Whiteness. He related a story from the book where he interviewed a terminally ill white man and asked if he would back a Medicare for All plan, and the man said, "No, if immigrants and Hispanics would get it as well, that's why we can't have nice things." Which is why I brought up the issue of infectious disease, contagion. I remember that one weird moment, and of all people, I think it was Ron Paul, back during, what was it, the 2008 Republican primaries, maybe 2012? Yeah, it's probably 2012. And they were somewhere doing a pageant, and they were talking about health care. And Ron Paul sarcastically asked the assembled GOP faithful, remember, this is pre-Trump GOP, "Well, what do you want to do?" And he wasn't even talking about people from outside our country. He was talking about American citizens. He said, "What do you want to do? Just let them die in the hallways?" And you can probably go find it if you're willing to engage in that much effort. The Republicans in the room just clapped and hooted and cheered for letting Americans die in the hallways. Because that's who they are. Dave in South Carolina, Stan, 2020 ads. "We already have scare ads about Medicare for All playing here." Again, South Carolina, Stan. "Ads that tell how horrible health care is in Canada, and USA does not want a socialist health care system such as they have in Canada. The ad says that if you get cancer in Canada, the wait time for a medical appointment takes so long that you're likely to die before you see a doctor. Sorry that I can't fit the scary tone of voice and graphics into text. Imagine a typical Republican scare ad such as the ones that warned us about MS-13 or ISIS. Oh, I think I got that covered, David. If you get cancer in Canada, the wait time for a medical appointment takes so long you're likely to die before you ever see a doctor. Bum, bum. There. Does that work? Yeah. And that's another one of those little problems we need to fix. It should probably be illegal to run ads like that. Lady B asks, why is it every time we have a budget shortfall or deficit, the first thing we do is cut services to the poor and the kids? Well, I mean, the Pentagon's not going to pay for itself. Can you help me on this, Bob? Are we all under mass hypnosis? Who in the fuck told us to approve of that, and why do we continue to follow it? Did it ever occur to them that those who make more should pay more within their income requirements and needs? Well, that's called progressive taxation, and one minute you've got progressive taxation, and the next minute everybody has to whistle the Internationale before class in the morning instead of saying the Pledge of Allegiance. Did we all drink drugged water? Lady B asks. Is this what it's like to be completely unaware of what you're saying and doing? Well, go back and see Ron and Raleigh's pig-eyed, mean, stupid, and venal. And I think you'll get pretty close to something that works as an answer. Meanwhile, back to the salads. Jack in Shreveport says, have you mentioned tzatziki yet? The Greek cucumber, yogurt, onion stuff? Yum for a dip. Oh, I love it. You use that finest part of your grater, and you're basically just making a pulp out of cucumbers. And you whip in garlic and lemon juice. I like to throw in some black pepper and plain Greek yogurt. And it's some kind of fantastic. Oh, yes, it is. I'm not a doctor, and I don't play one on the radio, so naturally, Steve from Georgistan says, Dr. Bob, which I ain't. I just have a lot of experience dealing with gut issues, mine. Would the magic kraut help, or should I avoid that? I would say avoid it. Not because the bugs, the little good gut bacteria, the probiotics would probably help, but all the salt in the kraut would, well, you'd be parked in probably one of your least favorite rooms in your house for a while. When your guts are a wreck, putting salt down there will shoot straight through you and draw out other liquid that's already in your body. You don't want to exacerbate. You don't want to exacerbate that motility. So, you know, really, yogurt, buttermilk, sweet tea. In limited, if you can do that decaf, you're better off because caffeine is a diuretic. Mexican Coke that doesn't have high fructose corn syrup in it. It has sugar instead. Open that up, let it go flat. Sip at it. These are all things that my hillbilly doctor mama always prescribed along the way. And oddly enough, one of the things, and I know what I just said about salt and kraut, but that's really salty stuff. It has worked all my life. If you can't keep anything else down, saltines and tomato juice. Oh dear, really? Okay, let's see if we could, just as a reminder of the halcyon days of Republicans back before they lost their mind and started following Nitwit Nero. Ron ran off and found the YouTube clip. I wonder if it's going to have an ad in front of it. Yep, it's got an ad in front of it. How about that? And it's an ad from the presidential candidate who advocated keeping loaded rifles under the bed in a house with small children. Yeah, we're not going to run that ad. No. Here we go.
Medical question. A healthy 30-year-old young man has a good job, makes a good living, but decides, you know what? I'm not going to spend $200 or $300 a month for health insurance because I'm healthy. I don't need it. But, you know, something terrible happens. All of a sudden, he needs it. Who's going to pay for if he goes into a coma,
well,
for example?
Who
pays for that?
In a society that you accept welfareism and socialism, he expects the government to take care of him.
Well, what do you want?
But what he should do is whatever he wants to do and assume responsibility for himself. My advice to him would have a major medical policy, but not before.
But he doesn't have that. He doesn't have it, and he needs intensive care for 6 months. Who pays?
That's what freedom is all about, taking your own risk. This whole idea that you have to prepare and take care of everybody.
But, Congressman, are you saying the society should just let him die?
No. I practiced medicine before we had Medicaid in the early 1960s when I got out of medical school. I practiced at Santa Rosa Hospital in San Antonio, and the churches took care of him. We never turned anybody away from the hospital. And we've given up on this whole concept that we might take care of ourselves and assume responsibility for ourselves, our neighbors, our friends, our churches would do it. This whole idea, that's the reason the cost is so high. The cost is so high, we cause a dump it on the government, becomes a bureaucracy, it becomes special interest, it kowtows to the insurance companies and the drug companies. Then on top of that, you have the inflation.
Behold libertarianism. Behold Republicans cheering the idea of letting people die. And the guy's 30 years old and probably doesn't have $300 a month. $300 a month for health care. Oh, it is to laugh. But that's Republicanism. Let them die. Freedom! Wolverines! Right. Maybe he could go and get an AR-15 and shoot up a school on the way out, and he'd be even freer after that. And he wouldn't have to worry about laying around and lingering and dying in a hospital somewhere. He could just get taken down by a rain of bullets from the cops. What a great idea. Yeah, I remember when the Cleveland Clinic was busy saving my father's life and giving him another 10 years of life. In the cardiac unit where we were, they had photos hanging on the wall, big ones, documenting the history of Cleveland Clinic and things like angioplasty. Did you catch the clip there where cranky old Uncle Ron Paul was talking about how they never turned anybody away at Santa Rosa Hospital back in the 60s after he finished medical school? Well, in terms of things like, cardiac care, back in those same 60s that Ron Paul was talking about, and remember, Ron Paul, for years, put out a racist newsletter. Let's just not let that slide. At Santa Rosa Hospital, they were probably maybe two steps above leeches and bloodlettings for things like cardiac care. Because places like the Cleveland Clinic, which was recently named once again the best cardiac care hospital in the entire United States, well, they were making advances, but it takes a while for the advances to filter down to places like Santa Rosa, Texas. And so lives were being saved even early on. They were maybe losing more than they saved, but a few lives were being saved, and great medical advances were being made in cardiac care in Cleveland and other big hospitals. But they don't they weren't filtering down very quickly. It wasn't the inflation. And it wasn't because we dumped it all on the government. Last I checked, Our Lady of Perpetual Cholesterol in Santa Rosa wasn't performing open-heart surgery. But that's about the time that we were also talking about taking, I mean, this is, good God, 7 years ago when we were talking about taking a chicken to the doctor and swapping a good burned-out rooster fit for frying for, an EKG or a shot of penicillin to cover for that night of misspent youth and indiscretion. About 1 million units. Yeah. That clip is terribly handy, and thank you, Ron and Raleigh, for finding it. Because it reminds us of how bad the Republican Party was before we had Trump to blame it all on. They cheered, you heard them, they cheered at the idea of letting people just fucking die. Now, being as how they're pig-eyed, mean, stupid, and venal Republicans, They wouldn't be cheering if it was one of their loved ones. If that 30-year-old who had refused to shell out $300, that just kills me, for health insurance, they wouldn't want him to be personally responsible and drop and dead. No, they'd want somebody to take care of it. They would not go to the church for it. The church does not shell out $500,000 for an open heart surgery. No. They'd want us to pay for it because they deem that they deserve it. It's just that the rest of us and the list that they keep in their head of those people don't. I mean, they've worked hard all their lives. I mean, he's 30 years old, but he was working hard all his life. He went to college and pulled himself up by his own bootstraps with lots of student loans and Pell Grants and shit. And work study. And he just didn't have time to think about health care. Right. I guess we could, maybe this could be a new feature of the program, the Titanic Tuesday flashback. At least in tonight's pageant, there's not a chance of anybody cheering at the thought of a fellow American dropping dead because they just forgot to buy the health insurance. That's the whole thing with Medicare for All. In a world that has it in it, a baby emerges on its first day of life on Earth from the womb. And the first thing that happens to that baby after they put it in the fetus frightener with the lights and the goo and the eyes and the... Yeah, right. The first thing that would happen to baby is baby would be eligible for the health care that it was receiving as a matter of right from right that instant on. And every person in America would know going forward that they could go to the doctor when they're sick and... Perhaps more importantly, go to the doctor when they weren't sick so they could keep from getting sick. I mean, that just makes sense to me. Does it you? Because this, where we are now just feels like crazy. By the way, Todd down in South Carolina, Stan, says, in reference to school lunches,
Did they not read the research that's been commonly known since the late 60s? Children cannot learn without good nutrition. It's just a fact. Are these people really that evil? This regime is targeting Title I schools. Well, of course they are. Of course they are. And yes, they are that vile. They are that evil. Now, the rank and file, well, I'll vote for Republicans because I love Jesus. Those people are just stupid. And they can't learn unless it directly impacts them. It's, you know, maybe more of their brains being taken up by the amygdala, the lizard brain, than the part of the brain that is responsible for compassion, empathy, that sort of stuff. And so they can't learn till it happens to them. There's a famous scene. Well, I don't know how famous it is because it's a book. But there's a scene, and I don't remember if it was replicated in the film. Part of the rise of Willie Stark in Robert Penn Warren's All the King's Men involves Willie being the county treasurer and asking questions about sketchy doings with the letting of a contract to build a new school in the county where he was treasurer. And they let the contract out through a process that was just filthy with politics and graft and backslapping and palm greasing. And one day, and it's funny, yesterday we were talking about tornado drills. Well, one day there was a fire drill in the school, as the story goes. And the precious little children, precious little white children, because it's set in Louisiana in the 1920s and 30s, 20s, 20s, began to, in orderly fashion, file out onto the fire escape from the upper stories of the school building. And then, because, as the book puts it, because the school was built of politics rotten brick, the fire escape collapsed and several of the precious little white children were killed, squished. And so at the funeral, Willie shows up to pay his respects. He's not politicking or anything. And a man comes over and lays one hand on Willie's shoulder and raises another hand and says, "Oh, Lord, forgive me, for I voted against an honest man." And that's the beginning of the rise of Willie Stark. If you've never read the book, I highly recommend it. But again, All the King's Men is fiction because Americans who make stupid decisions at the ballot box don't repent of it. They double down. So all of this bilious crap that you read in the multimillionaire for-profit media about how Trump's base might abandon him. Bullshit. Ain't gonna happen. Whatever he does, they will follow along. Because otherwise they would have to be like that fictitious redneck and admit that they had done wrong and then start trying to correct their bad behavior. So if you're out there placing bets, well, don't bet like that. Going back to E. Bowler, David in South Carolina, Stan says, "So Republicans don't want health care for all, yet are afraid of Ebola spreading in USA? Wouldn't a visit to a health care facility be first line of defense against contagion?" There I go thinking logically again. There you go, David. There you go. Y'all are practically neighbors, so David, Todd becomes sort of interchangeable. Yeah, there you go, thinking logically again. Steve in New York reminds us, "I prefer the term libertarianism." Well, that's true, because it is all founded on a lie. I found one of the more hilarious things lately was, again, doubling down on the hateful racism of Nitwit Nero. Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, and that thing on his head, followed up on Send Her Back, suggesting he would happily help, not pay entirely for, but contribute to, because libertarian, a plane ticket so that Ilhan Omar, who was born in Somalia, could go and see how awful Somalia is. The funny part of it all is that the better thing would be to send Rand Paul and that curly little labradoodle thing on his head to Somalia so he could see libertarianism in all its glory. Because libertarianism is how Somalia is operating these days. Yeah. David also asked, so is the Oompa Loompa oligarch going to send Walmart a $1 trillion subsidy to make up for the revenue they lose from food stamp cuts? That's one of the things that always makes me go, what the... Because how is it that they don't know? I mean, it used to be that the way things worked was when things weren't going the way an American corporation wanted, they'd call up their personal Congress critter, and in the case of Walmart, they've got two. They're in Arkansas, including long-necked dude, Tom Cotton. Tom, this here's Boll Weevil Walton down there at Bentonville. Yeah, Tom, what in the Sam hell you think you're doing cutting food stamps? Tom, that won't work. Yeah, you might recall we put a lot of money into you. Now, I don't want to hear more about this food stamp cuts because that's going to cut into my 15th home there at Vail. But see, the reason that Walmart isn't objecting in this case is because Walmart isn't selling the groceries to the schools. So it's not direct sales. These are food services that are taking the... Right. So there's no need for old Uncle Bug Tussle Walton to get on the blower to Tom in D.C. Mm-mm. Nary at all. See how it works? Sure. Let's see. I really didn't mean for this to be the topic. We were just going to do food stamps and Jesus says, fuck the little children and move on. But it sort of got our attention, and that happens from time to time. But we got lots of other stuff, too, that we can get at. Might be, will be, I think, interesting to discuss. And by the way, David lets us know that our school district has privatized school lunches. Those big, hot, freshly baked yeast rolls that the lunch ladies made by hand are gone. Lunch ladies that did that, well, the ones that didn't opt out and retire are now similar to McDonald's employees. No slur on McDonald's employees. Flavio, up in far Wisconsin, Rand Paul, send Rand Paul to Galt's Gulch, Chile. That libertarian experiment worked out swimmingly, LOL. Well, everybody, they're all libertarians until checks quit clearing and the lights don't come on. Note from Joey. Does not the good book state too much is given to those to whom much is given, much is required? Yes, as usual, Lady B is correct. The wealthiest among us should pay more, according to the Bible. Do these evangelie-brained Cal Christians ever read the Bible? No, they don't read it. They thump it. And Joe continues, so the place where I work recently contributed millions of dollars to state politicians to pass SB 5, a state bill which basically forces the taxpayers to pay for the cleanup of the local nuclear facilities. Again, these Republicans love them some socialism when they're lining their pockets, but goddamn the woman who wants some socialism to feed her baby. And Dave from the Blind says, remember, kids, as good God-fearing Republicans, you'll be required to pull yourselves up by your bootstraps. Granted, you don't know what a booty is yet, so when you learn to talk, please ask your mom. We fought for you when you were in the womb, but fuck you now. Brought to you by your favorite Republican capitalist Christian scumbag. You guys are on a roll. Lee in New York. Donuts for healthcare. You can get healthcare for $300 a month. That's a Band-Aid approach. You can get insurance-provided Band-Aids. The Kickstarter could be gauze for a cause. Oh, wait a minute. I like that. I like that indeed. So here we are at the beginning of the hour, of the second hour of the program. And sometimes I get going and I just, on Tuesdays and Thursdays, I just blow right past Brad and Desi, and I don't like to let that happen. So we'll take about 6 minutes and see what's going on in the wonderful world of the Green News Report.
It's Tuesday, July 30, 2019.
This is a major victory for California relative to its ongoing feuds with the Trump administration.
California wins, Trump loses as U.S. automakers make deal on fuel-efficient cars. Two networks to host climate change forums for 2020 presidential candidates. Study finds just talking about climate change makes a difference. Plus,
it is happening. I will tell you, as someone who challenged climate change 19 years ago,
Republican pollster Frank Luntz has a change of heart on the climate crisis.
All of those changes of heart, too late or otherwise, straight ahead. From BradBlog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comment.
So the Mueller's hearing came to an end. And after it was over, Trump exploded on Twitter. Truth is a force of nature. Yes. So is global warming, and you deny them both.
Oh.
This is your Green News Report. Okay, Desi Doyen, we had some good news from the U.S. automakers late last week, but now Donald Trump says he's going to do what he's going to do anyway.
Exactly. The Trump administration is still plowing ahead with its massive regulatory rollback to freeze auto mileage and emission standards in place and not improve them under Obama-era standards. That despite four major automakers striking a secret deal with California to make more fuel-efficient cars. Ford, Honda, Volkswagen, and BMW are circumventing the Trump administration's efforts to weaken mileage and emission standards. The deal with California means the four automakers, who represent about a third of the U.S. car market, will produce fleets that average nearly 51 miles per gallon by 2026. In an interview with NBC Sacramento, California air quality regulator Mary Nichols said that the car makers are keeping up with global industry trends.
These companies are already looking towards putting in more efficient vehicles. They're all working on more electric models. models.
Now, despite the rest of the world car market moving away from gas-powered cars to electric vehicles, the Trump administration says that it still plans to roll back those improvements in mileage and emission standards. The administration also still intends to try to revoke California's long-standing authority to set its own mileage and pollution rules under the Clean Air Act.
So the automakers are happy with the higher fuel efficiency standards. California and, frankly, Americans are happy to have more fuel-efficient cars. Only the Trump administration is against it. Who the hell is he working for?
Oh, he's working on behalf of the oil industry, which requested the big rollback because they lose money whenever consumers buy less gas. Meanwhile, speaking about climate change makes a real difference, literally. A new study by Yale University has found that simply talking about climate change helps lead people to greater acceptance of climate science, that just discussing the issue with your friends and family leads them to learn more facts about the climate crisis, which in turn leads to greater understanding and concern about the issue.
Well, then your friends and family must really be concerned about climate change, Des.
Either that or they're sick of it.
Well, yeah, and I've met some of the folks in your family.
With that in mind, it's kind of a big deal that Frank Luntz, the Republican pollster whose advice helped Republicans turn climate change into a partisan battlefield and helped them effectively mislead the public to delay climate action for years, has had a change of heart after he was forced to evacuate from his Los Angeles home in a wildfire in 2017.
Ah, funny how having your life threatened suddenly makes you realize you were wrong about climate change.
Yes. In a hearing of the Senate Special Committee on the Climate Crisis, hosted last week by Hawaii's Democratic Senator Brian Schatz, Luntz offered to help Democrats communicate about climate change consequences in a nonpartisan way to attract Republicans.
It is happening. I will tell you, as someone who challenged climate change 19 years ago, which is when the media uses the language against me, that work was done in 2000, 2001, and 2002. That was a lifetime ago. I've changed, and I will help you with messaging if you wish to have it.
Yeah, well, that's all well and good that it was 19 years ago, but it was about 30 or 40 or 50 years ago that scientists were warning about the thing that you now finally admit is real now that it almost burned down your house.
And finally, some good news. In the absence of the Democratic National Committee hosting a climate change-focused debate with 2020 Democratic presidential candidates, CNN and MSNBC have stepped in, announcing they will host town hall forums with the candidates focused on climate change. CNN will go on September 4th and MSNBC on September 20th and 21st to coincide with Climate Week in New York City and the UN General Assembly.
Well, that is good news, sort of. It would certainly get a lot more attention if it was done as an actual debate rather than one of these town hall forums that very few people tune in to watch.
True.
But we'll take what we can get. For much more on all of these stories and the ones we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Oh, the times they are changing.
Well, yeah, the times they are a-changing, but then again, there's that old saying that the more things change, the more they stay the same. Do you recall from last night's filibobster what I said about racism and being president? And I mentioned along the way that, well, we'd kind of like to think we've gotten to a place where you can't be a president and racist at the same time. And I mentioned Ronald Reagan kicking off his presidential campaign in 1980 in the home of the Klan, the Neshoba County, Mississippi fairgrounds there in Philadelphia, Mississippi. Well, it's just amazing the way things play out. So there's been a release. There are hours, days, weeks, months, you know, of tapes from the Nixon White House. I mean, he had more tapes than the biggest Grateful Dead fan that's ever lived.
And the interesting part is what's on those tapes. I mean, it's not just 97 different renditions of China Cat Sunflower, I promise. No, everything he talked about got taped. That's how we know about him sitting there talking with Billy Graham about the Hollywood Jews. Yes, Mr. President, they're all going to hell. They killed Christ. Right. Well, another piece of tape has emerged. And this works nicely within the framework that I've been trying to get through here so that maybe we'll kickstart the conversation on a broader national basis. Hi, Agent Fred. Hi, writing staff at MSNBC. And what I mean by that is we need to talk about the racism of the Republican Party outside of and pre-existing to the racism of Donald Trump. Now, when we talk about the racism of Donald Trump, we have to, of course, talk about the racism of Fred Trump, his filthy old pappy, who it turns out did time, at least a little bit, in Maryland, which may have a sort of subliminal effect on the latest attacks. Fred and Donnie were running some slums in Maryland, because that's what they are, they're slumlords. And Fred was invited to come to Maryland for a conference about required repairs that he had refused to perform. It all comes from a newspaper story in the Washington Post in 1976. Local officials in Prince George County, Maryland, had mandated that he pay for repairs in the apartment buildings that he owned in a place called Seat Pleasant. So, the housing authority revoked his housing license, and that meant that he couldn't sign leases with new tenants. So, a meeting was scheduled with local officials on September 29, 1976. Fred Trump flew down there and was promptly arrested. In the news story from 1976, Joseph Healy, who's the county's housing inspector's supervisor, at the time said, "We probably haven't issued 4 arrest warrants in the past 5 years. But old Fred was so nasty, so infested. By the way, Nitwit Nero had a bug crawling around on him today in Virginia. Lord of the Flies. No shit. And it just sort of crawled up into his hair and disappeared. Kipton, it was terrible. They put things in her hair." And then a few years later, well, that's when he got sued by the federal government. I thought it was the Nixon administration. At this point, it would have been the Carter administration, maybe the Reagan administration, which would be particularly fascinating and, well, goddess of irony, wonderful, because we have a new report out from the Atlantic. New content has been pulled from the Nixon tapes. This is actually kind of breaking-ish news. Tim Naftali is the reporter. And it goes back to the time when the United Nations voted to recognize the People's Republic of China. Okay. Now, old Cold Warrior anti-com paranoids that they were, both Nixon and Reagan were incensed that the Chi-coms had been admitted to the UN. And this would become a talking point over the course of decades with, among other things, the oxymoron, Flush Flimball, constantly shrieking about the, my friends, the Chi-Coms, Charlie Tree, and Bill Clinton, for 8 years in the 90s. And then he stopped talking about the Chinese as soon as Dim Leader got in and rubbed up against them all snugly and close. So Nixon calls Reagan, and they have a little chat about the Chinese. And along the way, they talk about the not-Chinese people who had been involved in voting to admit China to the United Nations. Mm-hmm. Well, here we are. That happened in October 1971. And here we are almost 50 years later, 48 years later, ciphering. And looky here, there's nothing in this, there's not a Trump in this story. It's just that paragon of Republican virtues, Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself. Just a couple of white dudes sitting around rapping. Get the hockey puck.
That thing on television was dying. Is that it?
Yeah.
To see those monkeys from those African countries. Damn them, they're still uncomfortable wearing shoes.
Well, and then the tail wags the dog there, doesn't it?
Yeah.
The tail wags the dog.
You got that? I mean, it's a nearly 50-year-old tape. But you got it, didn't you? If you didn't, I'll go ahead and read it. Reagan is the one talking, and he says,
last night I tell you to watch that thing on television as I did.
And Nixon says, yeah.
To see those monkeys from those African countries, damn them, they're still uncomfortable wearing shoes.
To which Richard Nixon,
heh, 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 heh.
Yeah. A week or so ago, Joe Scarborough tweeted something like, Jesus, forgive me for ever being a Republican. If you play this, and he's bound to become aware of this. I mean, this is the Atlantic. This isn't some, you know, this isn't the Socialist Workers Daily or something. They even have people from the Atlantic on that, my filthy morning habit. I wonder if we'll get a tweet that says, Jesus, forgive me for ever having said a kind word about Ronald fucking Reagan. That's the interesting thing. We knew he was a racist. You don't start your campaign in the home of the Klan if you're not a racist. Oh, but Ronald Reagan once said,
a shining city on a hill.
And that made everything A-okay. And the funniest part of it all, not funny ha-ha, but funny, curious, funny, interesting, is that we all, white folks mainly, participated in this notion, V.T. Blom and I were talking about this to a little extent last night. We participated in this notion that with the passage of the Voting Rights Act and the Civil Rights Act and the Fair Housing Act and the slow, tormented move toward integrated schools that has been proven largely a failure in 2019 because our schools are as or more segregated than they have ever been, because the urge to segregate among racists is more powerful than we really are willing to admit. Well, we participated in this polite fraud that it was no longer okay to be overtly racist. I mean, Jesus Christ, Nixon was not an idiot. I mean, by the time he left office, he was a booze-sodden, pill-addled mess. But he had been a pretty calculating politician. Same for Reagan. So I guess they thought that they could say, as long as they said the quiet part quietly, they could go about the business of president. October 1971. To see those monkeys from those African countries, damn them, they're still uncomfortable wearing shoes. Ha, says Nixon. You know, when they tell you who they are, for fuck's sake, please believe them. Is it okay to, I mean, he's dead and everything, but can we say things like Nixon was a racist and Reagan was a racist now? This is gonna create a problem, this Atlantic article. And there will be, by tomorrow, I almost guarantee it, a landslide of stories from Republican outlets explaining how it's not fair to call Ronald Wilson Reagan, old 666 himself, a racist, or Richard Nixon. You know, he didn't do anything other presidents didn't do. He just got caught. And this will be called historic revisionism. Nothing revisionist about it. It's just actual, tangible, physical proof out of their own mouths, confessions that they were who we thought they were. Nixon was elected on the Southern Strategy in 1968, and the Southern Strategy was predicated on stoking race hatred among insecure, white, Southern, up until then, Democrats. There was nothing subtle about it. It's who they are. Jesus. And it echoes down to us through the decades. There's a new study out. Dr. Bill touched upon it briefly this afternoon. I'd mentioned it to him. And it confirms things that things that we know. Yeah, I know. Steve in New York says, cue the, but those were different times horse shit. Yeah. Don't appear to be all that different now, do they? Ron in Raleigh says, well, hell, don't you know that was taken out of context? Some maggot said the Dolt 45 was taken with his out of context with his black remarks. Context is a motherfucker, ain't it? Yeah, especially when you let them go on and on, and you're positively swimming in context. See, those two nasty old white racists didn't like it that countries in Africa had behaved like independent sovereign nations and not simply tipped their hat to old Marse Nixon and done his bidding. Silent R. Lamar says, yeah, they talk about the shining city on the hill, but what they don't talk about is the surrounding swamp. Note, it's the swamp that gets you. Look on the bright side. They traded the quicksand for the Whirlpool Riptide Swamp. So now we run into the present day, because it's Trump-tanic Tuesday. According to polling data, and I guess it's long past time that we did polling data like this, Michael Tesler at the Washington Post, and this, of course, once someone asks Nitwit Nero about it, will send him into an absolute Adderall-fueled shit hemorrhage. Michael Tesler at the Washington Post examined polling data on maggots and what they perceive to constitute racism. You get a pretty decent sample when you're talking about the maggots and racism, because no more than 5% of Republican maggots are black folks. That kind of means that black maggots are literally the margin of error. I'm not going to laugh. That's not funny. Anyway, what Tesler found out is that over the past few years, Democrats and Republicans are moving further and further away from each other in terms of the definition of racism and what constitutes it. By the numbers, two-thirds of maggots do not, N-O-T not, consider it a racist act to use that word that has all the same letters as ginger. Two-thirds. When asked, only one-third of maggots said it's racist to use that word. On the other hand, 86% of Democrats recognize that it's racist to use that word. That's a pretty deep divide, isn't it? And to be fair, there is a Trump effect with all of this, because in the past 3 years, the number of Republicans who do not find it racist to use that word has jumped substantially. With polling data like this, sometimes you ask questions that are meant to elicit data on attitudes without asking straightforward questions, because you have to sneak up on the maggot racists. You can't say, "Hi, maggot, are you a racist?" "Well, hell no." So they ask questions like, they ask people to agree or disagree with questions like, "I prefer my close relatives marry spouses of their same race." I wonder what happens if you take the bullshit word race, because there's no such thing as race. I mean, scientifically, genetically, there's no such thing as race. What if you replace that with, "I prefer my close relatives to marry spouses of their same skin color"? I don't know if that would change it or not. But the bottom line is more than 75% of maggots agreed with that statement. "I prefer my close relatives marry spouses of their same race." On the other hand, and what this part looked at was Trump voters versus Clinton voters. So I guess by saying Trump voters, we have to include those leprechauns, often heard of, seldom seen, who voted once for Barack Obama and then said, yeah, fuck me running. I'm going to vote for Trump this time. Because that Hillary. Benghazi, her emails. So it's a comparison between Clinton voters and maggots. 63% of Clinton voters disagreed with, I prefer my close relatives marry spouses of their same race. So there's plenty of room for improvement there, too. But almost two-thirds said, no, I don't agree with that. The thing is, if Nitwit Nero finds out about this Washington Post story, he may see it as giving him cover to finally just do what he has been yearning to do and use the damn word. And for people, myself included, who have thought that it might be beneficial to finally have those outtakes from The Apprentice where he gingers every other word, probably won't make a difference, wouldn't make a difference. Because hearing him use the word, the maggots, the Republicans, would simply say, well, it's not racist to use that word. I hear them rappers use it all the time. If they can use that word, why can't we? It's racist to say white people can't use that word. Because that's how their brains don't work. Note from Renee in D.C. How's the grand old party of bigotry able to exist under the Constitution with all the illegal redlining of overt intolerance and sundry systemic disenfranchisement? Just a technical note, I think if Fred Trump's seat, Pleasant Arrest, was 76, it was during the Ford administration ending January 77. That's true. That was the arrest, but I think the redlining case and the racist housing practices charges came about 3 years later. That's what I meant about either Carter or early Reagan. Well, they exist because of the polite fiction that we're trying to work past all this. And some of us are. Somewhere around 35 to 40% of America, however, is not. And that's an interesting number when you consider the population differences, the population distribution differences, say, in the United States 150 years ago. The country as a whole was far more rural back then, but I would not be at all surprised to find that the population breakout works out along similar lines for North versus South. That's why the South was beat before they put the fire to the fuse of that battery that fired on Fort Sumter. They had next to no industry, and they had a hell of a lot less people, and a lot of the people that were there were people that, well, didn't exactly want to fight for the South. And when given an opportunity, joyfully signed up to wear the Union blue and go kill old Mars. Again, I think it's on U Street in D.C., sort of catty-cornered away from Ben's Chili Bowl. There is a not a lot of tourism memorial to the African-American veterans of the Union Army. And there is a heart and soul-touching list of names there. When I was there several summers back, I remember walking around and picking up pieces of broken beer bottle and empty beer cans just to try to tidy up a little bit such a secularly sacred space. But it does exist. So, to quote Denny Green, when he was head coach of the Arizona Cardinals, they are who we thought they are. They are who we thought they are. And so it comes as no surprise if we, you know, rip from the pages of the headlines. Ripped from the headlines of the whatever. If we wander down Texas way to a report from Team Coverage Action News Eyewitness KBTX-TV, and Copperas Cove, Texas, and the story of Samantha Grace Vaughn. Now, because this is radio, I have access to something that you don't have, perhaps. Then again, you're on the computer. You can go and find her. KBTX.com. I have a photo of Samantha Grace Vaughn. The people I presume to be Mr. and Mrs. Vaughn might have been a little over ambitious giving her the middle name Grace. Oh, goddamn, there goes Bob talking about a woman's appearance. Well, I'm sorry. Samantha Grace Vaughn has sort of a dirty blonde hair and a bright red nose and tattoos up one side of her face, and what appears to be a spiderweb tattoo that takes up the entirety of her neck all the way up to her chin, making her look rather like a bearded lady. She's got the words L-I-V-E on her right fingers and the letters F-R-E-E on her left fingers. Live, live, live free. 26 years old, Samantha Grace Vaughn. And did I mention it's a mugshot? She's got holes in her earlobes for gauges that look like they would be slightly larger than a dime. I'm just describing, not judging. For all I know, on the back of her neck, there's a tattoo that says, "Only God can judge me." Samantha Grace Vaughn had a hankering for a snort, and far be it from me to criticize anyone for having a drink. But at 1:45 a.m. Central Daylight Time this past Sunday, which would be Saturday night to folks like Samantha Grace, the cops showed up at the Trackside Nightclub. Somebody had dropped the dime on a little infant in a car seat in the back seat of an automobile that was left running, presumably with the air conditioning on. I imagine it's right warm down in Copperas Cove, Texas. Yeah. The cops asked her, "Ma'am, you been drinking?" And she said, "I've had 2 shots. Well, they gave her one of those handy-dandy field sobriety tests and two shots, apparently. I don't know. She must be about 2.5 feet tall and weigh about 15 pounds because two shots of alcohol took Samantha Grace all the way to 0.148. That is almost twice the legal limit. Among other things, she said, I just came here to pick up my husband, and I went inside to use the bathroom. But then I was waiting for him to finish up, so I just sat down and had me a couple of shots. Then he got off, and he sat down with me while I drank my shots. Well, the local constabulary decided it was time to arrest Samantha Grace Vaughn. Samantha Grace Vaughn did not take kindly to being taken into the care, custody, and control of the local constabulary. Apparently, they didn't taser or shoot her or pepper spray her. She did get a nasty bump on her head. When she whomped her little pumpkin head into the steel bar in the patrol car when she was being taken down to the Hooskow. Texas apparently has a statute called Abandoning or Endangering a Child with Intent to Return. That sounds lawyerly talk for leaving your kid in the car. The guy she was picking up at the bar, her husband, is in fact the baby daddy. And they've got a good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian marriage. Well, he's not been charged with anything. So this is just another day in Copperas Cove, I reckon. Until you get to the part that ties in with the story I was just going over, the polling data about maggots and racism. And I will ask your forbearance in advance. Nah, I don't. I honest to God, sometimes I do, sometimes I don't. I never know how to handle this. Does it serve any journalistic purpose to use the word out loud? Or do we just say that word? Or substitute the word ginger? Let's do that. Let's substitute the word ginger. After they asked her if she'd been drinking, she said, I had two shots. Apparently, she was sharp enough and semi-sober enough to realize that she'd gotten herself into a fix. Ah, wise is Silent R. Lamar. It's not the two shots, but the size of the shots. Maybe her one shots are equal to a half a pint? True that. If you pour your shots in an iced tea glass, well, I only had two shots. They were triples, but there was just two shots. See, that'd be six shots. It's a six shooter. But when she realized that, yeah, she left the baby in the car and the cops were there and she was telling the two-shot story, she decided to become what we shall, let's say she became assertive. Okay? And that's when she yelled at the police officers, you will not take my child and place her with a fucking ginger. Because 66% of maggots think that it is not racist to use that word that isn't ginger. point A, point B, point C, point D, and by the time you've connected the dots, why, by God, you've got a clan hood, don't you? Steve in New York with a note. Race versus color. I suspect using the word color would have been much higher because I suspect race doesn't include Latin folks, for instance, at least as far as maggots are concerned. Race to them means one thing, African Americans. People of color includes African Americans, Latin people, and South Asian and East Asian people, and Asian people generally. Probably true. Adding, Steve does, internal Republican meeting. Now, what do we do about the Trump isn't a real Republican or conservative bullshit? Well, they'll get around to that, too. He's not a true conservative, you know. Speaking of dot connecting, subject line, connecting the dots, Lee in New York says, do not think of Trump and Maryland as connecting the dots. Trump can only connect the dots on a page in Highlights for Children magazine. True. True. Going back to Frank Luntz in the Green News Report there, Bill in PA says, I don't trust Frank Luntz no matter what he says. Oh, no, no, no. If Frank Luntz tells you that it's blue skies and clear and warm outside, get an umbrella and a parka because it's probably going to be snowing and 10 below zero. On the subject of school lunches, Silent R. Lamar says, doggone it, Bob, as a school teacher, I've not had a homegrown school lunch from the hairnet ladies in the back since 1992 in my school district. Yeah, I've got a dear friend here who was a lunch lady down in Boone County, West Virginia. And God, her breakfasts were legendary. She'd be up at 4 o'clock in the morning and over to the school and making biscuits and gravy, and all those things that make hillbillies happy. And those days are gone. Gone. Ron in Raleigh writes, was Fred incarcerated? Was Pappy Trump incarcerated for housing code violations and failure to make repairs? If so, why haven't they grabbed up on Jared Kushner, who owns over 600 substandard units in Maryland? Code violations aren't what they used to be. Well, he was arrested. I don't know. And if you're arrested, you're technically taken into custody, so he was in custody. I don't know. They probably did not take him to jail because, of course, he had the ability to make bail. And moreover, do what had simply been required of him in the first effing place. Behave, Jim. Behave. You know that's impossible. So I felt like those three stories, Reagan and Nixon, racist Clavern brothers, the statistical evidence that supports that what we've said all along is true. Yes, they are racists. At least 2/3 of them, the maggots, are racists. And, you know, that's the cool thing about statistics. You can extrapolate the little bastards. So that means 2/3 of the maggots in the Congress, probably actually more, are racists, too. That includes people like Moscow Mitch and Rand Paul and that thing on his head, and John Cornhole from Texas, and Joni Ernst from Iowa, and Rafaelito Eduardo Cruz, the anointed booger-eating future king of America, and, well, on and on and on. You know, Precious Lindsay from South Carolina, that newly minted senatorial asshat who's Josh something from Missouri, Bishop Willard Romney. You think Bishop Will, I mean, that's an interesting case because, of course, he's a bishop in a church that didn't find people with dark skin to be fully human until somewhere around 1975, and that's long after he was discharged from defending the Parisians from the Viet Cong. Mike Lee of Utah, the constitutional spurt. Just take the list and extrapolate away. What are there, 54 Republican senators? Let's see. 3 into 5, 1 times 1 times 2, 4, 8. So that means 18 out of 54 Republican senators aren't racists. Huh. Not encouraging. And not quite enough, if you culled them from the herd, not quite enough to convict on a bill of impeachment for being a racist. Let's run over and check in with Todd. Hey, Todd.
Hi, man. How's it going?
Good, man. Good.
So, why do racist people insist on not being called racist?
Well, because they know there's a bunch of us that think that's a bad thing. And they think they're perfectly nice people who just like to use that word. Because all them rappers do, too.
Yeah, but see, a word is a word. It's actions. Just like when Mitch McConnell was in the well of the Senate this past week, and he said, I spoke out against the Russian interference. But, you know, the bill's good.
I'm telling you, this here is McCarthyism, what they're doing to me, calling me Moscow Mitch. It is McCarthyism, pure and simple.
You know, it's funny because I seem to remember us having a conversation about how powerful he has made himself over. I don't know. Hold on. This is loud. I don't know if you remember. We were talking about Mitch McConnell, and he has finagled himself into being one of the most powerful people in the Western world. Yeah. Through pure deviousness.
Yeah, that works.
You know. So this what you got? You know, you got me sparked, though. I mean, all right. I don't know. First of all, let me slow down. I don't know if you already mentioned what the statement from the Oedipus fascist said today or yesterday. He's the least racist person on the planet or in the world or something of that nature.
Yeah, in the world, I think. World is one syllable. Planet is two. Take a bet on world.
Wow. That's a good measure. He is averse to multisyllabic words, so that's interesting. Yeah, that just sounds stupid. Come on, I don't understand these people. And when one listens to Washington Journal, you know, now they hear him say that and they're all on board. Like, yeah, stop calling us racist. We just hate those black motherfuckers. You know, it doesn't mean we're racist. They're But that's where we are. This is where we are. Now,
oh yeah, we're not camped out. We're moved in and set up housekeeping.
We've set up housekeeping, which is exactly why this is going to be a difficult election. I'm not feeling good about this election at all, for a lot of reasons, but. There's this upcoming election, if we have one, you know, all the president.
Hold on. I'm not going to go to that. If we have one, we're going to have one. Because to not have one would just be too overt. We're going to have one. It's just that he's, you know, with people like this, John Ratcliffe.
He's trying to get a bunch of toadies and lick spittles in so that it can, so that the rat fucking of the election by Mother Russia can proceed more easily and, shall we say, gracefully.
Well, I absolutely agree. I mean, we saw this coming a mile away. You know, what, months ago we started wondering, well, how many of these people are on the take? And, you know, I don't hear a peep about the Butina woman and her intersection between the NRA, the GOP, and the evangelicals. You know, I think she's still in custody, if I'm not. I think she is, yeah. And I don't hear anyone making a peep about that. But back to what you said about this is just outrageous. But this is it. And in fact, he got Bob Barr is the worst. Now he's got him in there. He's like a rook. You know, he can move across the board, and do a lot of things. You know, if this were to be chess. So he's putting all the his folks that he's listening to on Fox News. He's putting all the people in the right places. We should all be really, really afraid. I think it may be too late. I think we've lost it now. It's too far gone.
Well, I'm not there yet. But it's a confusing and frightening and dangerous time, Todd. I spend a lot more time than probably is healthy for me thinking about things like impeachment.
Mm-hmm.
And I've come to a place, and I know it feels really, really good to say impeach the motherfucker. And if it was just a show of hands and done, cool.
Hold on.
Hello?
Okay, so I'm not exactly sure what's going on there with Todd. But what I was saying about impeachment, is that there's no way it isn't a time-consuming process. And both, and I hit this last night, and I might as well point it out again. If we had started on this in June of 2017, impeachment would still be going on. As it is, When the evidence is fully developed, which it isn't still, it's a process that will be going on in 2020. And the multimillionaire for-profit media will not treat Democrats with the kid gloves they did the Republicans when they were impeaching Bill Clinton over a blowjob. And if, as we all suspect, a second Trump term is more or less America is fucked, then it becomes imperative to beat him at the ballot box, no matter how dummied up they may try to make it. That means we've got to have the largest turnout in the history of the United States. And if we're going to beat him via impeachment, it may be something we're doing in 2021. Don't know what happened with Todd. Let's see, he's calling back. So just bear that in mind. And, you know, this isn't because I'm some sort of neoliberal establishment shill.
It's just because I pay attention to process and how things work. And if you really, 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 really want impeachment, you may have to have a second Trump term to get it. It's a possibility. All right, you back, Todd?
I think I'm back.
Yeah, I think you are.
Sorry about that. I think I hit the wrong button.
Happens to me all the time.
Yeah. Oh, God. It's just that I don't understand how many people are blind to what's going on. And you know, I don't know. I was listening to public radio this afternoon, it must have been. So there's some author, I wish I had his name. I wish I had the name of the book. It's like, oh, you know, this reminds me of 1930s Europe and the fascist movement. I'm like, where have you been? You know, we've already got the fascism here. It's entrenched already. It's here.
Yeah, it's not. The proto is off of fascism.
Oh, no. The proto, that's, look, they dropped that. They dropped that like you drop extra weight on a plane. That's done. That's built. You know, that's gone. So, you know, you sparked me when you're talking about the school lunches, because that's just like old research. You know, everyone knows that it's common knowledge that children cannot learn. I mean, your brain develops in a certain way. And if you don't have the right nutrition by like third grade, you know, in conjunction with education, you're kind of not going to have a good life statistically. I mean, you might make it. You know, there's always, you know, some outliers. But, I mean, what they're doing, what they plan to do is just frightening. There's a reason that we have free lunch programs.
Right, because hungry kids don't learn.
Hungry kids don't learn. Their brains don't develop properly. I mean, and you know, we've come to find out now we need a lot of fat. You need a lot of fat. Like, bacon fat is not as bad as we thought it was.
No, one of the more hilarious things I've seen lately, and it was it popped into my Twitter feed as a result of our buddy Ben Birch responding to it, was a vegan lady who said that eating eggs... No, wait, because this might be a chew-through-the-hockey-puck moment. The vegan lady who said, eating eggs is worse than smoking cigarettes.
Oh, please. Yeah.
And, okay. And see, I'm old enough to remember the great... Let's see. There was the great egg horror, where no one was supposed to eat eggs, and then we found out that, lo and behold, that eggs are chock full of omega-3 fatty acids, which are actually good for you.
Right.
I remember the great jihad against pork. Don't eat pork. Pork's terrible for you. Pork's bad. And then we found out that, no, it's the other white meat.
Mm-hmm.
Did they give up on that? Because I think they probably should have, that advertising slogan.
Well, I mean, I draw a line at pig's feet because I'm making the pig toenails, and you know, I'm not doing that.
I was in the store the other day, and they had packages of chicken feet. And I told Agnes about it, and she said, well, you can bring chicken feet into this house and have chicken feet in this house, or you can have me in this house. You pick.
They're very popular. Let me tell you something. Oxtails and chicken feet are very popular with the West Indians, man. I have folks in my family.
Oh, no. I get it. I mean, I've seen them in a lot of different contexts, but just sitting there raw in the grocery store in the meat department, I kind of looked at it. You know, they really do. They, you know, divorced from their chickenness, they look very dinosaur.
They do, don't they?
Kind of scaly
Yep. You see the toenails, and it's like, wow.
I saw a ramen recipe. A chicken-based broth ramen recipe the other day that called for the inclusion of making a broth with a whole bunch of chicken feet, because apparently there's some real chicken flavor goodness there in those feet.
Well, I like my chicken flavor goodness in the little canister that I try to purchase now and then.
I know, but I'm on a mission. I'm going.
Dude,
that ramen in Philly was so damn good. I'm going to make me some. I got to figure out how, but I'm going to make me some.
Bob, I'm glad you brought it up. No, seriously, now I was in the market. I go to the market a lot for some reason. But, you know, the Marchurin, I don't know how to pronounce that. Look at the label.
Oh, the Maruchan?
Maruchan. Okay. Now, you know, I'm big into miso. They have a miso, so I had to try it. You know, it's 50 cents a kind in a styrofoam cup that you're not
supposed to market. Did it come with the Flavor Boost packet?
No, this is just, now see, there's different levels of these dry noodles. This is the basic level. However, it's miso flavored, right? This is a new flavor. Like, I mean, this is brand new. And I, you know, because I love miso, I had to try it. I'm telling, and even the ramen is better. I guess because people are eating better ramen now. I followed the instructions exactly. I let it steep for 3 minutes. I could not believe, I didn't even add any vegetables to it. It wasn't too salty. It was great. I could not fucking believe it. Like in a pinch, like if you really don't feel like cooking or you just have to like have something, you know, people are sick and you can't cook, whatever. This miso flavored ramen is worth having in the house. I'm just saying, because, you know, if I had more time, I would add vegetables to it, but, and maybe a little miso paste, which is very expensive. It's not cheap, but it's very good for you and it's tasty.
Umami.
Right. Oh, they sell that at Trader Joe's. I have two jars now. I have two because the shit was so fucking good. I had to go back when I was over there to get another one. And that's probably who was trying to get through to me was somebody jonesing for, you know, umami, because they don't know. You know, that's the next sensory in Asia. That's sweet and savory. I don't know. They have another sense class in their food. Like, we go sweet, sour, hot. What is it? I don't know. There's another one.
Sweet, sour, bitter. Yeah, and the Japanese identified the fourth, and that is umami.
Umami, exactly. And that's what makes miso miso, and that's what makes soy sauce soy sauce. You know, it's different. There's something to it. I'm almost a fanatic. I'll be honest with you, man.
My problem is going to be finding decent ramen noodles, because those little bricks of pre-cooked, no.
Right.
I'm going
right.
to have to go to there's an Asian grocery down in Charleston. I may have to go down there, or maybe I'll find it. Shit, maybe I can order it online.
Listen, that's what I was going to say, because over in Colombia, there's an Asian on the far side. Like, this is this is way too far for me to go. I can't go there any that often. They service the people who make the Chinese food. You can get a 50-pound bag of sticky rice in there. You can get cookware, but they have some of the brick from Korea, and they have, you know, it's a little liquid packet in there. They have the kimchi. I mean, it wasn't bad. It was okay. But the rice noodles, I mean, I'm looking in the cabinet now. You know how you get addicted to this stuff, man. It's hard to go in there and not buy shit. You just have to. So you got me started on this. But they had the good rice noodles, good ramen. But see, you had that good ramen, man. I was not kidding you, man. Philly is no joke. Chinatown is no joke. Did you pass some of those stores with the ducks in the window?
Hell yeah.
I know you're going back. I know
wasn't in a duck mood, but yeah, I can say with no reservation and no offense either. The food in Philly Chinatown was better than the food in D.C. Chinatown.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. I've been to both. Yeah, because, you know, the one in D.C. Chinatown is near the TV station. It's in northeast. Like, when you come in,
D.C. Chinatown's down by the Verizon Center. Yeah, just
right near the basketball, center. Right.
Yeah, it's
when you're coming in from Maryland.
You get off the
Avenue.
You get off the it's right there, like H Street.
Mm-hmm.
old D.C., you know, where the Surratt house was. Mm-hmm. I think the Surratt house where the original conspiracy that led to the Lincoln assassination was plotted. It's right there, and I think it's the Walk and Roll restaurant now.
Oh, wow.
Which reminds me, and we'll get back to the issues of the day in a moment. I was having a conversation with Brother Deacon Asa, because he too has an acorn grill.
Uh-oh. Damn, man.
And I was just looking at it one day, because most of the time when I use it, I put the smoking stone in it, and it's got little ears in it where the smoking stone sits. And then there's another set of brackets where the grill itself sits. Mm-hmm. But it's round. And I was looking at those ears for the smoking stone, and I was thinking about other round things in this world that benefit from the application of extremely high heat. And then I got to thinking about a world without propane or natural gas, where you have to generate heat through the application of air to fire.
Are you getting all rot-ish?
And so what I thought was, hey, wait. This thing's round, and it's got those ears for the smoking stone. What if I could find a good hand-hammered, original, no kidding, no Teflon, no T-Fal, none of that bullshit, Asian wok?
A real one, a low-carbon steel
it,
one.
Yeah, and right. set it down in that space created by those ears.
Oh, shit.
And, you know, so it wouldn't touch the fire directly, and it wouldn't be... you know, and it wouldn't fall through.
Oh, that's a great idea.
And I could stir fry from hell over hickory coals 700 degrees.
Man, that's a great idea. Then you have the griddle now where you could keep the food warm. You could have that griddle with the low propane on, just low, really low. In a pan, in a Dutch oven, whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, that's an excellent. I heard you talking about this. It's funny because... Anyway, it's too similar. You know, when you have a big pot of rice, it's like, oh, egg fried rice, here we go. But yes, that's an excellent, because you know, when you look in the back, if they ever let you look in the back, that's exactly what they have. They don't have a wok with handle. They don't have a wooden handle. There are two handles on each side, or one handle on each side, and it just fits over a hole. And there's just flames coming up, you know, like a gas flame coming up. You know what I'm talking about? Have you ever been?
I know exactly what you're talking about because I watch my friend Ging over at the Thai restaurant all the time.
Right.
And she turns that gas on and it goes boom, and you know, bang, 700 degrees.
700, and see that's, man. So you're onto something because that's the thing.
Oh, I've been testing all kinds of stuff. I took a stock pot out with water in it. And just turned the griddle up on high to see if I could boil water in a pot, just letting it sit on the griddle. Yes.
Right. Hmm. Hmm. See, so we've been waiting for the story.
Yeah.
We've
so
been waiting for the
so that, story. That speaks well of being able to. And I talked to the boys up at the Wiggling Pig, and they're getting me they're getting me some neck bones. Because you gotta use pork neck bones to make ramen broth. And it's got to simmer for a day.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like making stock. What is stock?
Yeah.
Wow. All right, you got me a little excited now. You got the griddle up, and I heard you talking about the shims and this and that. So, and it gets hot enough. So that means it can be, obviously it can be cool. So that's beautiful. How thick is it?
I didn't get out and measure it, but... The little placards on either shelf that tell you all its features. We do know that the Blackstone Company, importing company or whatever, because this thing's made by, you know, some little human being, poor little human being chained to a table in Guangdong Free Trade Province, China or something. It's heavy, and it's rolled steel,
okay.
But they also say that it's got a... Oh, shit. Let me find the photo.
If I got too granular, I apologize.
No. This is just funny because I saw this and I put it on social media because it irritated the hell out of my grammar gene. Emblazoned across the placard is outdoor cooking at its finest, IT'S.
It does not possess a thing.
Yeah. Its finest what?
You had the blue marker out. No.
Yeah, I circled it in yellow highlighter and put it on social media. But then somebody pointed out that I had been so busy being outraged over IT'S that I meant, also because I guess I'm not that big of a, metallurgy and steel. Built to last with a power-coated black steel frame. And somebody pointed out on my Facebook page that usually that's a powder-coated black steel frame.
Right. Mm-hmm. So stuff that spattering won't stick to it as well. It's right. And it won't rust. I mean, I think that's...
But in this case, it's a power-coated. I guess they got a power washer and...
They didn't go to MIT, you know what I mean? They came over here and went to community college. They had online English,
They just got Cletus down in shipping to write the copy.
Shit, pretty soon we'll be the ones chained to the table. That's what's fucking sad, but that's a whole other subject. Oh, that's beautiful though, man. That you got it up. So can I say something else about the wok, please?
Yeah, go, man, go.
I remember my first real wok. Like, you can get, I mean, a lot of people have.
You got to season it just like you do an iron skillet or a griddle surface.
See, that's what I'm talking about, man. See, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about. Right there. That's exactly what I was getting to. It's like a good piece of cast iron skilletry. It's a low carbon steel, and you have to season it. When you season that sucker right, and you get the right implements. That's why I brought up that at age, I was shocked when I found out at AG Supermarket. I was like, wow, this is the real deal. They have all the proper cookware.
See, I think about
it in a real Chinatown. You see that stuff.
Yeah, I think about maybe I'll have to wait till I go to D.C. again. But there's an Asian supermarket just out the road from the Manassas exit. Mm-hmm. And it's huge. And they've got three or four aisles of, like, gigantic stock pots and woks and knives, and I may have to wait till I go back to D.C. and just...
Man, the acorn seems like it's perfect to season a wok, though. It gets really hot.
Man. Oh, yeah, 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 exactly.
Shit, you could have a little cottage industry of seasoning woks. I'm just saying.
Well, the fact of the matter is there's a little empty restaurant about a mile up the road. And if I was a business guy, which I'm not, I'd figure out a way to open a barbecue and short order grill kind of joint.
See,
and then,
that's what
and I... Then, and then 6 o'clock every evening, come in, fire hot,
do
up,
the show from
hot
there.
Up, hot up the mic and do the program
this,
from there.
You can do that. No, you can do there's a barbecue place.
No, nah, they'd say, no, nah, on this side of the river, if it was on the other side of the river, it would probably go off like Roman candles. On this side of the river,
three nights a week, Thursday, Friday, Saturday.
On this side of the river, it would just die, because I mean, these are people who think that going to Gino's Pizza is going out to eat, or Subway right. down to the Shell station.
What are you eating high on the hog tonight?
Because when that place was a restaurant, I mean, they made homemade biscuits every day. They couldn't stay open. Of course, when I asked why, they said, well, I can't get anybody to come and work and stay working. Everybody's into their pee.
Man, those pills, I bet you.
That's what you said, everybody's into those pills. But then again, if you're also paying somebody sub-minimum wage and expecting them to make it up in tips from a bunch of Baptists on this side of the river, they're going to starve to death. Because, again, the Baptists leave a dime under the coffee cup and a Bible verse.
So you're saying on the other side of the gorge is a different story?
Oh, Fayetteville, yeah, Fayetteville is a totally different story. I mean, you've got,
You've got a hip happening little restaurant culture, and people, and you know, they manage to stay alive even through the lean times when the season's not on.
It's funny that you brought it up like that, though, because that's kind of my business model I'm moving forward with. Is you know, I'm going to have a radio show, podcast. It's not public yet. I have something out there, but. And I'll be able to do research and stuff, and then cook. And I'm going to have a few things, but they'll be really, really good. You know what I mean? Like, and if you can't afford it, that's fine. No hard feelings. You know, just I'm only making enough. I'm to sell out, and then when it's gone, it's gone. And you know, and that's that. But that's a good, you know. I've seen your work, man. Those ribs. Are you kidding?
Oh, and I mean, it's not you've seen it, and people have tasted it, and they haven't gotten any hate mail over it.
Mm-mm. No, you got the seal on it, and it's juicy inside. It's got the right. No.
Mm-hmm.
So, man, well,
got a question coming in from Darlene in Connecticut. I got my first cast iron skillet. What's the best brand of skillet besides Griswold that I guess you can't find except on eBay now? And what's the best oil to season and to coat it with if pre-seasoned? Lodge. Unless you're buying some sort of, you know, expensive, you know, only dentists can afford to buy it. But
right.
it's more a matter of stay away from. I was in a hurry. I confess.
Mm-hmm. I love this though. This is beautiful right here.
It was around Thanksgiving, maybe a couple of years ago, and my daughter said, "Daddy, please, I gotta have cornbread." And of course, we gotta make cornbread for the dressing too, right?
Right.
So I was in a hurry, and I just ran in to Wally World. God forgive me.
Mm-hmm.
And back in the department where the Coleman stuff and the sporting goods are, I just bought a 3-piece set of, I think it's called Adirondack is their Walmart brand.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Iron skillets.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And about 3 weeks afterward, my daughter told me, "Yeah, I didn't mean to, Daddy, but I dropped it and it just broke into a million pieces."
It cracks. Yep.
And it's just because it's cheap crap Chinese steel. Cheap crap Chinese cast iron, I should say. So the
That's
trick
the
stuff
is left over.
Lodge is reliable. Now, as for you know, they'll give you seasoning advice for ironware, but the bottom line is, wash it in warm water, no soap, no scrub, just you know, give it a rinse. Mm-hmm. Put it on the range top, the stove top. Get it hot. Let it cool down a little bit. And mm-hmm. I just, any, what you want is an oil that will tolerate high heat.
So, that's it. It won't smoke too much.
So, in the modern era, I just use canola oil.
Bless.
Thank you. I just use canola mm-hmm. oil. Wipe it down real good. Put a real thin layer in the bottom of it after you've, you know, wiped the sides and everything. Put a thin layer in the bottom of it and put it in a preheated 350-degree oven for about 3 hours.
Yep, bake it. That's it.
And then you take it out, you dump the oil, you wipe it down, and as long as you, and over time with use, mm-hmm. it'll develop that beautiful hillbilly Teflon.
Mm-hmm.
And after you use it every time, wipe it out. If you've got some stuff stuck on it, you know, at the end of the cooking phase, deglaze the pan somehow, rinse mm-hmm. it out, wipe it out. Leave a little bit of water in it, dry the water out on a hot burner, and then put a little oil back in it and tuck it away.
Tuck it away.
And if you're good, if you're good to them, they'll be good to you. We've got cast iron here that's over 100 years old.
That's what I'm talking about. Yep. Yep. Yep.
And it's
how that goes, man.
It's heavy as hell, but
there's
nothing like cooking with it. And for instance, if you've got a good sized iron skillet and you get some good country ham, I remember years ago, we were not years ago, but a couple of years back, I think it was our buddies Gary and Gaia out in Oregon who were intrigued by the concept of dirty gravy. And that stuff is just magnificent. But you got to have mm-hmm. you got to have really good, salty, somewhat funky country ham slices.
Mm-hmm.
And you put that in your iron skillet with you know, some water in it. And you let the water leach the salt and the and some of the flavorings out of the ham, and you know all the way till there's nothing left but the ham and the water's all gone.
Mm-hmm.
And then you pull the ham out, set it aside, and you deglaze the pan with mm-hmm. coffee, strong coffee.
With coffee?
Yeah.
What does that do? Take the salt out?
No, this is poor folks' food. It deglazes all of that ham, yummy, crispy, little wonderful goodness off the bottom of the pan. You let the coffee boil away some, and then at the end, you pour canned milk in it. Just canned milk, not sweetened condensed milk. Canned milk, just carnation canned milk. Just pour it in there, and it makes this beautiful sort of khaki beige color. It's thin, it's not thick, and you pour that stuff across hot, fresh biscuits, and you will cry.
Well, you know how it is down here, right? Like, when I cook, I piss people off when they look in the pan and they're like, you're not making gravy? I'm like, you know what? Everything doesn't need gravy. But,
I don't
know,
you and I may have to throw down over that. I can't think of anything that doesn't go good with gravy. But see, the front end
my
of that.
My grandma used to look at me. Look, I'm telling you, all right, sometimes I'm not in the mood. I'm like, okay, fine. I'll make some gravy. I can make gravy. I'm just saying, I mean, I make gravy a lot because, you know, I have to cook for other people. But it is a waste when you throw it out. But when you were talking about seasoning, once I would get that pan like that, I would say the first thing I would do is fry something in it. Like, put an inch of oil in there and fry something.
Yeah.
It cannot go wrong. And,
right, and
you
see
know,
when
and
you, then, when you're doing that
when you
when
you're, like your skin.
When you're doing that trick with the country ham, the deglaze with the coffee, what ends up before you put the canned milk in it, that is what is called red eye gravy.
Oh, that's great.
That's red eye gravy,
that's
and it's real strong.
Stuff.
And you know, you can trim the little bands of fat off of it and let it render for a while separately. You know, if I want a lot of dirty gravy, I do that. And of course, you know, the smoky goodness is in there too, and it's yeah. magnificent.
Now this is interesting, and this is just a real sidebar. But when you say red eye gravy, you see the secret to a good cheesesteak is that cut of meat. It's not ground chuck. You know, it's that ribeye. Because it's got the right fat to lean content.
Yeah.
Like, I made cheesesteaks yesterday. I just, you know, and it's just something happens. This is magic.
Well, see, that's like when we went to Pho 75 in Philly, and that chain that first got started in D.C. that Chris turned me on to. They didn't offer it that way, but they'd bring it to you if you asked. So, I did as Chris suggested, and it was a pho that had eye of round in it. And so they brought mm-hmm. Me just barely recently unfrozen raw slices of eye of round. And that pho, of course, was about 1,000,000 degrees Fahrenheit. And you take mm-hmm. that raw eye of round and put it in the hot pho, and it cooks right then and there because it's paper thin.
That's the whole key, exactly.
And, of course, it had no fat on it. But, Jesus, that was fantastic. But I was looking at some Kroger brand steak sandwich meat, and it was, you know, mm-hmm. it wasn't reconstituted, ground up, turned into it. No, it was, you could tell, it was razor-thin sliced, probably.
Ribeye.
Well, maybe ribeye or, you know, possibly like top sirloin or maybe chuck. I don't know. But. I looked at that, and over in the international section, they had some pre-made pho broth, and I was thinking, that might be worth doing.
So how do you spell pho?
P-H-O.
Oh, that sounds like Vietnamese.
Yeah, it is. Pho.
That, no
with the
wonder.
Noodle
okay.
with the noodles and the bean sprouts and the basil leaves and the jalapeno and the lime.
Okay.
And by the way, going all the way back to our miso discussion, got a note from Manny, and Manny said, just so you know, the instant ramen manufacturers make ramen specifically for different countries' tastes. In my honest opinion, the instant ramen in Japan, even the cheapest brands, are infinitely better tasting than anything they export here. But yes, the Maruchan spicy miso ramen, I get them in Publix, in a paper bowl, is actually quite good.
Interesting. I've never been to Japan, but I keep up with things, and I absolutely believe him because I've seen people eat miso soup for breakfast in Japan.
And I was thinking about something the other day as I was playing with the griddle, now that I got it all seasoned up and pretty.
Playing griddle.
I watched a video. There's a big difference between like a typical classic Euro-American omelet and the Japanese egg cakes. You ever seen? Go find a video and watch the making of Japanese omelets in just a little food stall in Tokyo or whatever. It is a thing of beauty. And yes, I'm gonna try to make those too. Just to prove, that it can be done by a hillbilly with a propane tank and a griddle in his backyard. Because I don't live near somewhere that I can get somebody to make me a fresh Japanese egg cake omelet. If I want one of those, I'm going to have to make it. And the same with a kick-ass bowl of ramen. And I can't always be running off. I can't always be running off to Chinatown in Philly for it either.
No, that's what I'm saying. So when you go, you got to get where they have. You got to come and come. Like, it's hard out here.
Over the weekend, I studied on how to make the soft boiled marinated ramen eggs.
But it's so funny because I was talking with a foodie friend of mine. Just before, earlier tonight, she's having issues with her family, blah, blah, blah. And so we're talking about cooking, and she's an excellent cook. Excellent. And I was telling her about, I was listening to I think it's called A Splendid Table. It comes on Saturday afternoon on public radio. Okay, so the current host, I believe, is from the Philippines. And this is about, some months ago. Could have been a year. No, it was less than a year ago. He was saying the four things that everyone needs to know, and something he grew up on was egg fried rice. And I was telling her, I'm like, wow, when he said that, I had a hard day, I had a hard couple of days, and I had everything in the house to do this exactly like he described. I had the fish oil, I had everything, and ginger. A couple of things you want to make it, put in to make it, just perfect. That shit, I just followed, and it's on their website. He put the recipe on there. I mean, it's not hard, but some egg fried rice. See, the world is your oyster now. And that leads me into what that book title that you said at the beginning of your program, The Way of the Griddle. It's like it has a zen-like quality.
Yes. If I'm not careful, at some point, Agnes will take a picture of me standing out at the griddle doing my crane position, both arms out, one leg up.
I'm serious. You think I'm not joking, man? This is not a funny business now. This is not, we're being serious here. This is not, I don't play with food. Now, come on. Seriously. Now, if you want to do your pose, your semi-yoga position, that's fine. But I'm serious, man. That's a book title, because you can learn to feed the coal-burning hillbillies that are in close proximity to your abode. You can burn that nasty shit or you can have good food.
Well, see, that was why the first thing that got cooked on the griddle was a thick sliced hunk of jowl. Because it occurred to me that pork belly's not easy for me to cook.
Oh, you seasoned it with that good pork grease, didn't you?
Yes, I did. but I thick sliced it and just fanned it out across the griddle. Not, you know, not more than four or five slices. Big hunk of jowl isn't very big. But what I was thinking about is, in the absence of pork belly, a piece of griddled, thick jowl would go great in a bowl of ramen. Yes, it would go great in a bowl of ramen. Oh, by the way, going back into the way of the iron skillet, I just did my crane position again. Darlene says, when you bake the cast iron skillet in the oven at 350, do you bake it upside down or right side up, or do you try to divide it equally among the two?
Well, right side up.
Right side up, because you're going to actually have a little thin layer of free floating oil in the skillet, assuming your stove is on the level and everything. You can't turn it upside down or you'll have a grease fire. Be very careful after 3 hours taking that thing out of a 350-degree oven, please.
It's going to be super hot.
Well, I'm a klutz, and I was seasoning a skillet. In fact, it was back during the very beginnings of this program. And we were going to meet with someone, with a group that we hoped would sponsor us, and did, for a year, enough to get us going. But a couple of nights before, I'd been seasoning an iron skillet because someone had washed it with soap. And I pulled it out, and I forget exactly what, but I flounged with it, and some of that oil splashed onto my hand. And
stop it.
It cooked my hand. You know that carryover cooking we all learn about? You know, take it off the heat and it keeps on cooking?
Carried over to your hand?
I had carryover cooking in my hand, and God damn, it hurt.
It doesn't go away. You don't even feel it at first. It just starts sinking in.
Yeah, but I mean, it was, oh man, straight into the ice water. That was bad. It was bad. But these things happen to me from time to time. Back before we started the horn, I was doing a play over in Fayetteville, and there was a scene that required, it was set at Christmas. It's a play called Tuna Christmas, two person show, and it's about a couple of DJs, and they tell the stories of their little town, Tuna, Texas. And at one point in time, we had a special effect where one of the Christmas lights was supposed to explode. And my good friend who built the effect did a pretty good job with it, except the night of dress rehearsals, it exploded and caught the plastic Christmas tree on fire. And I, remaining in character, said, "Well, doggies," because Texas, and walked over and took both my hands and put out the fire. And the melted plastic from the Christmas tree adhered to my little pink hands. And once again, I experienced the concept of carryover cooking in human form. And came off stage, and my dresser was there, because there were constant costume changes. And I came off stage, and my dresser, who was a girl from Philly, by the way. Yeah. Just the way things work, time, Tralfamadorians, Cronus and Clastic Infundibula. And she was waiting, and no sinks or anything. She just started pouring ice-cold water on my hands. And then slowly but surely, after the dress rehearsal was over, we pulled the Christmas tree off my hand and took no small amount of hand with it. So please, Darlene, be careful. I mean, it can be painful. But Darlene says, talking about the cast iron skillet, looking at it and cooking with it, so cool, because it's like you're a cowboy or a cowgirl cooking out on the range or the plains.
Well,
or you're a hillbilly living sustainably up a holler in Appalachia 130 years ago.
There's a lot to that. I mean, right, and it's the thing. If you have to escape or leave your house and you just need to bring a couple things, you can put like cast iron cookware right on the fire or on some wood that's on the fire that will eventually burn, and it'll be fine. And the other thing is that, well, when you take it out, don't think you're going to have one pot holder. Like, use all the pot holders you have to insulate yourself.
I'm a firm believer in those little black silicone mitts. Because they're not as bulky, and they've got a cloth lining. The only trick is your hand has to be totally dry, and it has to be totally dry, because if it's not, the heat will the silicone will protect against the heat, but it'll transmit to that cloth lining, and it gets real hot real fast. But that's the same with anything. Never grab a hot skillet with a wet anything, because the water will transmit the heat.
But see, when Darlene does her first sautéed chicken breast with herbs, and then hits it like with the proper seasoning at the last minute, and you want to have your oven already on, you want to crack. Remember, whenever you're cooking, crack that oven up to 500, because when you open the oven, you're letting all the heat out. So just, I don't care what the recipe says, crank it up to 500 if you have enough. Just be honest.
The other thing is get one of those little thermometers that hangs on the interior rack of the oven, so that you can see if 350 on the dial on your oven control is actually 350 in the oven.
Absolutely.
I mean, you talk about a nicely done iron skillet chicken breast. I'm a slightly simpler man. I'm just thinking in terms of how wild she's going to go with her first pan of cornbread.
Well, that too. It's just so much. I mean, the world is your cooking oyster. I mean, and the more seasoned it gets, you'd be like, why do they sell us this Teflon chemical crap? And those little flakes of iron are actually, they might be good for it.
There's a certain amount of irony in the fact that tens of thousands of hillbillies got poisoned by a corporation making Teflon. And the people who got poisoned had been getting along for about 200 years using cast iron for their cookware that was actually far safer, tolerated a lot higher heat, and was overall just better than Teflon in the first place. Irony.
And I'm telling you, I was in my mid to late 30s when I acquired my first bean pot with a lid, and I got it from, let me tell you, Macy's. You cannot go wrong.
Oh, I love it. And before our Macy's was Macy's, it was Kaufman's, and Kaufman's was headquartered out of Pittsburgh, and they had the most, it was down in Charleston, and there was an inside West Virginia department store chain called Stone and Thomas. They got eaten up too, and they had a basement kitchen department. I've still got some things that I bought at the Stone and Thomas basement, and some things that I got at the Macy's basement, or the Kaufman's basement. I love that stuff. And
you know what I'm talking about.
Right, and there's no replacing, and, you know, it's odd we're talking about food and all these things, but this is actually, it's actually more than just a couple of guys sitting around talking about food, because with the death of American retail, and, for instance, we're losing, I think, if we haven't already lost, our Macy's in Charleston. Yeah, but with the death of American retail, the one thing you can't get at Amazon is your eyeballs on a product, because a picture is not, you know, a picture may be worth 1,000 words, but it is not worth one fucking hand on the product.
No.
And so, and okay, so you order it, you hate it, and then you're into this whole goddamned ordeal of getting an RMA, and then you're paying to ship it back, and bullshit. We've got this notion that everything has to be ordered on the fucking internet now, and some of it's convenient, okay? Some of it is convenient, but, like, shoes? I will not order shoes on the internet.
Doesn't work.
Because,
doesn't work out.
Because the sizing, I think some of it had to do with when the American shoe industry died and went overseas, and so they're using different lasts.
The Asian foot is different than the Western foot.
I used to be a rock solid 12 in everything, and now I'm anywhere from a 12 to
medium,
a
straight up the road.
12D, you know, and now I'm anything from a 12 to a 14, and God help me,
damn.
If I, And now, God help me if I get in. Because it lasts. And God knows those European sizing. I think I'm like a 48.
Jesus.
And it's frustrating as hell. The best pair of shoes, the shoes that I wear when I go out hiking in the woods and stuff.
Yeah.
And they're great on pavement too, but these things have these really, really wonderful sticky rubber soles so you can go across wet rock and things like that. No problem. Not break an ankle. It's an Italian brand, and I was telling Chris about them when we were in Philly. It's an Italian brand called Salewa, S-A-L-E-W-A.
Mm.
And I've never, from the moment I put them on, didn't have a blister. And
you didn't have to break them in?
No, there was no break in.
Wow.
And they're fairly light.
Were they Gore-Tex or all leather?
No, these are a rubber, leather, and sort of lightweight mesh mix. The ones I got for Agnes have Gore-Tex in them. Gore-Tex adds a little bit of weight. But they've got a really good rubber toe rand on them, so you're not going to beat the hell out of your toes against, you know, tree roots and stumps and rocks, and because, you know, I'm a klutz in the woods, too. But the neatest thing is the lacing on the toe goes down and there's the last hole, or the first hole, depending on how you look at it, is almost right on top of your big toe. So it laces a little.
Wow.
So it laces a little bit differently, and you get a much better grip around your foot. And so even though it's not like a mid ankle or anything, even though it's not on your ankle, you still got better support that I think tends to keep you from turning or rolling an ankle, even without it being up over it.
Well, it sounds like it would afford for a more of a custom fit around your foot.
Yeah, it does. You can tinker with it, and you get a better wrap around your foot. And I was lucky because I found them on sale. You know, cheap bastard. I found them on sale at one of the little outdoor shops over in Fayetteville. I would never have bought them if I couldn't have tried them on.
See? Right, you would have been like, "What is this brand? Never heard of them."
I mean, I ordered I ordered some Florsheim slip-on, wingtip, tasseled dress shoes.
Mm-hmm.
And
the moccasin tight with the sew around the top.
No. These are wingtips. You know, just
Oh, you said wingtip. Okay,
yeah.
Okay.
And I mean, they were beautiful. You know, high gloss black. I don't think I wore them more than three times because it was sheer torment to have them on my feet. And those...
You mean in India?
Oh, yep. Because that's where Florsheim is now.
I think I bought that same pair, and it was like, you know what? I cannot walk in those shoes. I wear them to funerals only. Yep. What the hell is that? See, they're kind of pointy at the end.
Yeah, a little. Yeah, they come out to a round toe, but it's not, you know, it's the same shape as a cap toe Oxford, only it's a wingtip without the cap toe.
Well, let me ask. I know we're running short on time, but you know, did you see right near City Hall? That's a Macy's. It's a cornerstone. There's a Macy's there. I don't know if you saw.
Yeah,
it.
Yeah, we went by it on the last day we were there, and Chris looked up and said, "Hey, there's Todd's Macy's."
Right. Now, that used to be John Wanamaker, and you know, legend has it that was the first department store in the country, like way back, you know. I mean,
I've heard of Wanamaker's.
Well, that was the Wanamaker's. That's where Wanamaker's, and down there at 8th and Market was where Litz was, and Litz came shortly after. But, yeah, that was Wanamaker's, and I mean, Wanamaker's and Strawbridge's. They still have – well, Macy's is still good. You can go in there and have lunch up at the top floor and, like, look down into the mall and have tea and high tea and high-end beer. And, you know, it's kind of cool. But at least somebody – because that building is beautiful, and it's right there next to City Hall, and there's a subway stop right under it. I mean, you can't beat that.
But I was just curious. You know, I just like Macy's, though. Macy's is cool, but that was Wanamaker's. You've got to go back. The food is going to bring you back. But, you know, like you were saying about the pots and being able to touch things, and that's the truth, because, you know, Darlene's going to need a bean pot. Like this, you know, like this thing is 1 inch thick of cast iron all the way around. I'm looking at it right now, and it has a lid, and I use it. That's what I use for deep frying. I can use it outside too, but that's my deep fryer because it's so heavy. You want something heavy when you're frying. But if I don't want to fry it, you can always do something different with it. You can repurpose this. So anyway, she's going to
see. My preferred vessel for gumbo making is that big old 130-year-old iron Dutch oven.
Oh, man. You have one of those?
Yeah. I mean, it's, you know, it's a good foot across. You know, foot and...
Cast iron and enamel?
No enamel, just cast iron. I mean, this literally belonged to my great-great-grandmother.
Oh, my God, Rob. You got to hold on to that. Don't let that go anywhere. Don't let anybody mess with it.
And see, because when you make gumbo, you got to get your oil all the way to the point where it's smoking.
Right.
To make your roux, so it'll come up to that lovely brick color in a hurry. And then you got to throw in your Holy Trinity. Bang. You know, just like emerald.
That's it.
Because that's what stops the roux from cooking. Iron is so perfect for that because it heats evenly and consistently. It's magnificent.
I wasn't hungry before we started talking.
Yeah, I know how this goes. it's like Boss Man Wayne's son said on that post yesterday with my BLTs. He said, every time you post something, I get hungry. And I responded, every time I post something, it's because I already was.
Yeah. And you were absolutely correct. This is BLT season. The tomatoes are fresh. Go get your Wright's thick sliced bacon, or whatever the best bacon you can get, and get the best bread.
I got to do it fast. If I can figure out a way to do it with fresh tomatoes in, what it cries out for is Benton's bacon. Yeah, Madison, Tennessee. Just look up Benton's Bacon. Yeah, you don't have to worry about it. You can order this online. You don't have to worry about it. It's not going to fit. Best bacon. It's the best bacon in the United States, which probably means it's the best bacon in the world.
Well, you say that with some authority.
And it's not that expensive. I mean, you're close, relatively speaking. The shipping, basically, it works out on a per-pound basis. It's not much more expensive than bacon in the grocery store. But when you open one of those vacuum-sealed packages, real live, honest-to-Jesus, no kidding, hickory smoke will perfume your house for a week.
That's what I'm talking about. It's got to have the hickory.
Here's the list. Trader Joe's sourdough, Benton's bacon, fresh tomatoes, the white American Amish cheese. Done. And I've kindly left out the mayo, but let's just get that out of the way. No, you cannot make a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich without fucking mayo.
You can't. You gotta have it. It carries flavor.
It pulls the whole sandwich together. By the way, we'll close out. This has been a fantastic conversation. Close out with a note from Lady B. I know we can't do impeachment. Not enough Americans support it. The Senate won't act on it. So, really, I'm not going to bitch about it anymore. It's tiresome and not worth it. But 112 House members are now calling for an impeachment inquiry. So, I'm not saying we shouldn't, and I'm not saying the inquiry certainly shouldn't go forward. We need to understand how the timing plays out. But Lady B says, and thanks for the food porn. You guys are awesome. Tell Todd to make me some black folks mac and cheese.
Oh, shit. I can do that. Don't play with me with mac and cheese.
Well, while you're at it, you know, don't be stingy. You can make me some, too.
all like, come on, that's going to put a movie on? Are you kidding me? Please.
Is that mac and cheese that gets baked in the oven?
Oh, what? Well, it starts on top of the stove, then it goes in the oven because
I
put the breakfast on.
Yeah, because, I mean, the stuff I grew up with down in Alabama at the cafeteria there was made by magnificent African-American women, and it was in these, it was at a cafeteria, so it's in a long tray, and it was, I mean, just redolent of the sharpness of the cheddar and everything, but there was a creaminess to it when you cut it, and it had been baked, and it was golden brown on the top, and, oh!
They said, hey, baby, you have to eat more than that, baby. Now, come on. You know, and the ladies with the big arms and the bust that comes out 2 feet. I mean, come on, man. Those are the cafeteria ladies, man. As we all knew, I don't know what it was about.
Yeah, same thing when I went down to the University of Alabama. I had enough food. I haven't had enough money for one meal a day, and I took it at a little cafeteria that's part of that has
You
been...
kidding me, man. That's awful. That's terrible.
Well, no, I mean, so where the cafeteria was is gone now. It's part of the expansion of Bryant-Denny Stadium. Of course, so is where I lived. But you could go in there and eat for $2, and they would feed you till you were full. And that mac, it was the same mac and cheese too. And the recipe I have for the really out of this world, wildly different tartar sauce. To the best of my understanding, that came out of the west side of Florence, Alabama, which is the African American community.
Well, you know your way around some food, that's for sure.
I have been, to use the phrase that's been going for a couple of nights now, I have been carefully taught.
So I know you're going and we have to go, but you know, with this impeachment issue that Lady B brought up, I just want to say this because I accused you of being a vacillator at one point. I remember that. But I see the value in the impeachment investigation because it just brings the facts forward for anyone who's on the fence, in my mind, because the people who are sunk in, they're just sunk in. It doesn't matter, what is found, but for everyone else, and this has to be on the, it has to be part of the congressional record. That's my point now. There is no way in hell this mug should be able to leave the White House or stay in the White House without having a stain on his ass. Fuck him.
Let's end with a funny, shall we? Because.
Oh, you want to laugh? Okay.
Yeah, I want to laugh real bad. Because this is maybe the funniest stupid Trump story ever.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, this is beautiful. He only recently found out, Nitwit Nero, about the Moscow Mitch trending hashtag.
That's old news now.
Well, to us, but to him it's new news. And it pissed him right off. And so he decided to go out and defend his good friend Mitch.
Mm-hmm.
And said the following.
Mitch McConnell loves our country. He's done a great job. McConnell is a man who knows less about Russia and Russian influence than even Donald Trump, and I know nothing.
Well, how true is that?
I can say with certainty that we have never given a cowbell to Donald Trump, but for once, you gotta.
What's today, the 30th?
And I know nothing. I know nothing.
Oh, my
That's
God.
That's Donald Sergeant Schultz Trump.
He knows less about Russia and Russia influence than even Donald Trump, and I know nothing.
They would have thrown that line out if the SNL staff had written that for Alec, what's his name, to do as Trump, Alec Baldwin. They would have thrown that line out. No, you can't do that. No, that's just ridiculous. You can't. No, that's too stupid.
They're going to do that Saturday. You just talked it up. How can you not? I mean, they fed it to you on a Frisbee, like some buds. Come on.
Like some bud. Hey, man, we got to get out of here. I'll talk to you soon.
All right. Talk to you later.
Later. That's our buddy Todd calling from South Carolina. Stan, serve it up to you on a Frisbee like some bud.
I was wrong. The Salewa box is Italy, but it Flavio corrected me. Salewa started July 8, 1935, when Josef Liebhardt, the director of Munich's Cooperative for Saddlers and Tapestry Handlers, registered a sister corporation for saddler and leather wares, S.A. Sattler, Le, later, Wa, Waren, Salewa. So it started out as a German concern. My shoebox talked about it being Italian, but cool. I appreciate the information. So it's time to get out of here. Went a little overtime last night, a little overtime tonight. Sometimes it's just unavoidable. Let me again, on the way out the door, thank everyone who keeps this program on the air. Let me thank you for 6 days of fundraising-free radio. It is so nice to just open the mic, say thank you, and move on without having, you know. And so we got one more day of it. And I cherish each and every one of them. And you are who makes it possible. Thank you, thank you, thank you. Beyond my ability to express it fully, thoroughly, and deservedly. Thank you. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Sorry about your food poisoning, Steve and Sparky. Y'all got to stay out of that. Y'all got to stay out of that Holiday Inn buffet, okay? And thanks to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years. It's our 20th anniversary at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.